broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of Refresh Your Wealth with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. My name is Mark Kohler, a CPA and an attorney and an investor, small business owner, parent, surfer, fly fisherman, workaholic,
hacker, kind of stuff, man. Golf.
Yeah. I got my amazing co-host here, Matt. How do you introduce yourself?
I'm just a guy. I'm just the sidekick here.
Oh, come on. Jeez.
Man, I got to follow Mark Kohler and all those, illustrious accomplishments. Yeah. I'm an attorney too. So, sorry, you're listening to two attorneys and we both bill by the hour, but we do give half rates when we're together. So it's actually a bargain. It's free. Actually, this show is free, I guess.
Two for one.
But we've been doing this show for years and love talking about helping the small business owner, entrepreneur out there, someone trying to live the American dream, you know, save for college for their kids, which we're going to be talking about today. Just, you know, planning for retirement, minimizing your tax burden, protecting your assets, building your business. That's what we love to talk about on the Refresh Your Wealth Show.
Well, talk about throwing in the kitchen sink. Anything else you want to add? World peace? Solution to AIDS? I don't know.
We stay in our lane. I mean, that's about it. That's a lot. I mean, that's a lot. And I know it's not, you know, as exciting as maybe your favorite sports show or something, or even the politics, you know, the drama of the politics right now. But man, this can make a difference in your life. And there's so much stress in all these things and a lot to do with your taxes that it's having a little more confidence and knowledge can certainly make your life better.
Yes. And we hope all of you can be a better captain of your ship. Now, before you decide, why am I listening to this podcast? Let's introduce the show. First, we're going to do a tax tip and a legal tip, something we do every week when it's not open forum. Number two, we want you to think broadly here. This is actually part one of a two-part series. In this part, we want to talk about creative ways to pay for college. Your kids may already be in college. You may be going back to college. You might have young children. You might be contemplating the birth of a new child and you want to get a jump on this. We want to talk about ways to pay for college in the most tax incentive, smart financial way. Now that's part one. Part two, we're going to have a special guest come on and talk about the techniques of getting financial aid, grants, scholarships, and seeing if the government can help you or your children get into college much more cost effectively. So it's too much to hit in one show. So we're going to give it our best shot. Matt, how could you entice someone to listen to this entire show? Is there anything else you could throw in?
Well, I think that this is, you know, this people talk about this being the next crisis, you know, that the cost of higher education, more and more people are going and wanting to go. And it's good. It's good for a lot of people, not everyone. But the student loan crisis is like the next financial crisis we're going to face in America. And there's a lot of data and statistics about that and a lot of smart people talking about it. So we don't want you to fall victim or your kids or your grandkids, you know, wherever you're falling in this situation to this student loan crisis. So, and, you know, I mean, there's even the politicians, you know, if you're following the political cycle right now are talking about forgiving everybody student loan debts if you have them. And Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren want to just forgive it all. You know, no one knows how to pay back their student loans. I want to know if I get my money back that I paid back. Do I get that back because I didn't get anything forgiven? I don't know. I'm going to have to write in on that. But it's a big topic.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the student loan crisis here. And, man, I was going to go off on it, but we'll come back to it. There's a couple of interesting statistics that will blow your mind, and we'll come back to it. And I've got an important example of a phone call I had this week from a man and woman with a senior in high school and what their thought of what they were going to do. And I went ballistic on them on the phone, and they won't be calling back. I'm okay with that. I felt I did my duty.
Mark's a little opinionated on this topic, so yeah, beware.
I chastised them. No, I think they're going to call back. In fact, the problem was the husband and wife weren't on the same page, and I took someone's side.
Ooh, dang.
Unbeknownst to me, I'm like, here's what I think. And then I got the, I told you.
It
did not go well. So I'm not liable for that. That's their problem.
I mean, you just spoke your mind. I mean, you got to tell people what they need to hear, not what they want to hear.
That's right. That's what you're paying for when you call me, is Matt, our attorneys, our CPAs. We're here to tell you what you need to hear. We're not going to sugarcoat it, but we'll sugarcoat it, but we're still going to tell you. And then you got to, I do tell my staff, don't be harsh on the phone. Just get to the point. Be nice about it, but nail it. Okay. Now, before we get into that topic of, school and debt. Oh, how exciting is that? Okay. We're going to do our tax and legal tip. Matt, this week you're dipping your toe on the tax tip side, and I'm going to do a legal tip. We're switching it up.
Yeah, switching it up. Let's we keep it fresh here on the Refresh Your Wealth Show. So I'm going to give the tax tip now. Okay, well, I do consider myself a tax lawyer, not a CPA. So I'm kind of more like
that. I fully endorse that. That's okay.
Okay, all right. I'm kind of more like Tom Cruise in The Firm, the tax lawyer, not Ben Affleck in The Accountant.
That's more me.
That's more you, yeah.
Yes.
And I'm more Tom Cruise, The Firm.
I think Ben Affleck would have taken Tom Cruise in that show, because Ben Affleck's a stud in The Accountant. If you haven't seen The Accountant, I was eating that one up. Oh, I loved it when he went in that room and broke down the numbers on the whiteboard. I was like, oh, I love it. So cool.
Yeah. I'm glad you liked it. I don't think we'll agree on this one, but all right. So I'm going tax lawyer on this. And of course I work in the retirement plan field is my level area of expertise. And so I'm going to, lean on that. So here's a common situation. And I'm going to have a blog article coming out on this. Is something new that I learned. If you are quitting your job, you have a 401k with the loan, what are you going to do? Most employers, when you have a 401k and you've loaned money out of the 401k to yourself, you're still working there, are going to force you to repay the loan. But that is not your only option. Now, if you can repay the loan, great, repay it. And then, you move your 401k out to an IRA or, whatever you want to do. But you are able to roll out the loan, and you can roll over the loan in addition to the other assets in the IRA, in your 401k, to an IRA. So it's a rollover process of the loan itself. I never knew you could do that, actually. We've ran into that situation a few times. Every once in a while you get that question, but something new that we learned, it's from recent tax legislation, but so it's somewhat of a new rule. So it's really cool. If you are leaving your job and you have a 401k with a loan, it is possible to roll that loan out over to an IRA, and then you're paying back the loan to the IRA. Or another 401k if you did another 401k.
Within the deadline.
Yes, there's a deadline on that. You still have to keep up to date on the payments. So you can't, skip the payments, of course. And you have to do it within the year in which, let's see. So you do it that tax year. So you have to do it that tax year when you leave the job, because there's a reporting issue from them issuing the 1099 to the 5498 for your IRA. So if you're doing it in the same year, you're going to be okay.
So don't quit your job on December 31st.
You're going to be cutting it too close. Yeah. Although you may have some time, a lot of those companies give you, 60, 90 days or whatever to roll it out. So you might be able, if you did that, quit in December 31st, you probably are actually in a sweet spot, because you would still have some time into 2020, I guess now. To actually move the 401k.
Well, I love it. I learned something new. I did not know that. Borrowing from your IRA has been prohibited. It's voodoo. You just don't talk about it. But it's interesting that if you roll that from a 401k to the IRA, you get at least a year to wrap up the loan and make plans, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I like our tips today are short and to the point. Last week, I think our tips were like monsters. So I'm going to jump right into the legal tip.
All right.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Okay, on the legal tip, this is the result of a phone call I literally had this morning. It is a, I want to give a tip on partnerships, and it's something I learned is a little poignant. So I set up an LLC for these guys even before I knew Matt Sorensen. It was over 15 years ago.
Wow.
And this partnership has stayed intact that long. Not by choice. They've pretty much not spoken for about 5 years. They're really mad at each other. But they bought a property together, and one doesn't want to sell and one does. And the one that doesn't want to sell is squatting on the property. And
of course they don't want to sell.
Yeah. Of course they don't want to sell. And barring a lawsuit scenario, it's going to be real hard to get this man or woman off the property because they're just like, I'm not going to cooperate. I'm not going to talk. And that's their best strategy. And frankly, it probably is not a bad strategy if you don't want to move. So this other partner is really in a pickle because they've got a, how are you in a pickle? I don't know if that means, are you in a pickle jar? Are you in a pickle
jar? Yeah. You're like in a jar and like, you know, with all the other pickles and the pickle juice.
You're stuck. So I'm in a pickle. I don't know if that would make sense, but anyway, he's stuck. And so what we did today is I was on the phone with the litigation attorney saying, hey, will you explain to me your operating agreement? Because I got to make sense of this and who I'm going to sue and how I'm going to do it. And so I wasn't advocating against either party because I had kind of a conflict because I helped him set up the LLC years ago. But I was basically an interpreter of the operating agreement I set up 15 years ago. Now, there's some major takeaways here. I had put in the partnership agreement, believe it or not. This was the good part. I'll go good first. I'm kind of a glass half full kind of guy. The good part was I put in a tiebreaker person. There was a CPA that was familiar with both these guys at the time. And I said, if you guys are ever deadlocked, a dispute, you can't agree, this guy makes the vote based on what's best for the property and the partnership, not for which one's best for one person. And we have a tiebreaker. That was the good part. The bad part was, is the LLC had some conflicting provisions where would this tiebreaker apply in this situation or not this one? Because I used the word notwithstanding any other provision in this agreement, here's how it works. Well, the tiebreaker vote is another provision in the agreement. So is that included or not included? Is that trump the other? And so it's in legalese word or in legalese and lawyer battling in a courtroom, there's some interpretation going on. Now, as an attorney, I never want that. I want my operating agreement to be tight. I want it to be clear, concise, to the point in any situation. And Matt and I, over the last 15 years, have really worked on our operating agreements and bylaws and different corporate documents to make sure when you come here, you get the experience of thousands of these agreements being drafted. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it was a little surreal because I felt like I really nailed it in the operating agreement and I made a mistake by not being more clear. And the guy was, the other attorney was approximately my age. He'd been an attorney for about 20 something years. And he was like, hey, Mark, I get it. 15 years ago, I'm not the lawyer today I was 15 years ago. And he was really understanding with me. I mean, we all get better at what we're doing. But here's my two major takeaways. And Matt, you may want to add something. Is number one, this is the danger of just downloading an operating agreement off the web. And if you go to an internet service to set up your entity, half of our clients that come to us new after doing that, they didn't even download the operating agreement. They didn't want to pay for it. They just thought, oh, I just need an LLC. I'll just file the articles. I'm okay. And then their partner and them are in a fight and they don't even have an operating agreement. I've got another situation just like that that I dealt with yesterday. So if you go online, you get what you pay for. And sometimes you don't pay for anything at all and you don't have anything to help you out. So you really want to make sure you're getting your documents from a firm like I would hope ours, you'd consider it, that's got a lot of years of fine-tuning an operating agreement. And we're affordable. We are extremely affordable on this front. Under $800 to set up an entity in any state. to even in a partnership scenario. And it can cost more if you need a lot of time and handholding, but we can be doing it very affordable, or even our paralegal setup at $400. Just get it done, guys. Print it out. We'll sign it. And we got standard provisions. The second point I would make is, in a 50-50 partnership, make sure there is a tiebreaker procedure. Because if you're in a deadlock and your operating agreement or partnership agreement, for lack of a better word, doesn't have any sort of tiebreaker procedure. I've even seen a partnership, this was a few years ago, they literally wrote it in the document, if we can't decide, we flip a coin. That was their rule. But you know what? That's better than a lawsuit. They flip the damn coin. And, you know, I would say do it on video with a witness. But but anyway, you've got to have some sort of procedure. And so I need to take a little personal advice here. I've got an amazing partner with Matt Sorensen. And for 10, 12 years now, we've never had a major dispute. We've always been able to get to, I think, a level-headed decision together. But it wouldn't hurt for Matt and I to have that too. Who knows if one day we wake up and we feel strongly about one thing.
We have a third party. Our original partnership agreement has a third party in it that's a tiebreaker vote.
We do?
Yeah.
Who's our third party?
Everyone. It's in there.
Is it in there?
Yeah.
I thought I chose my wife as the tiebreaker vote.
No, you know, and you knew Ruin a little better, and I was like, whatever. But he's a reasonable guy, so, you know.
Okay,
so
I think I remember that now.
You have a third-party tiebreaker, see?
I have not looked at our partnership agreement in years.
Yeah, I don't either, because he just, you know.
Well, apparently you remembered that part.
Well, I'm just more of a detailed person, I guess. I had to look it up, because I was, you know, wanting to, you know, leave. I don't know.
Is there a coup that, okay, I'm really concerned now. This is... I'm really upset. I'm hurt. You know what? Screw it. I'm done with the show today. I'm out of here.
Okay. You're gonna leave me. Well, I love the tiebreaker situation of even a random thing. I think like having a person that you both trust, an advisor, consultant, accountant, common friend or business associate that can understand your business is the best. But I like the random thing if they can't come up with something else. I literally wrote one in on a client's operating agreement. They were just going to draw off a stack of cards. They were just get the highest card, one, you know, and that was their method for resolving a dispute. But, you know, deadlock is probably one of the most devastating things in a business because partners can't resolve an issue. No one can move forward and they can't get off the dang thing. And it just totally ruins the business. So, even if it is random, I like it. Now, a lot of them will just have mediation things you can do too, and those are nice. We have those as defaults if you don't do anything. But I love the deadlock. And the 50-50 is a very common business structure.
Yeah. I've got a new one. I'm going to try to advocate for this in my next partnership consultation. The tiebreaker, you go up to a random Starbucks, you go in and make your order, and you ask the barista, how do you say it? What is the little person that makes your coffee and drinks? Is it called the barista?
The barista.
Okay. Uh-huh. I just want to make sure I pronounce that right. I was going to say the barrister, uh-huh. But that's more of a legal person. you ask the barista. I don't know if it's the person that gives you the drink or the one that takes your order.
The barista is the one who makes the drinks. The barista may take your order, but a barista is, you know,
they're legit.
Know their way around the... equipment back there.
Okay. So you ask the barista, what would you do? And that's the tiebreaker right there.
That barista would be very interested in hearing both sides of this and, you know, resolving this dispute.
Okay. Well, let's jump into the topic today. And Matt, if you'd give me a little liberty here, I'd like to talk about where not to go for money in order to pay for school and kind of, you know, explain this rant that I had with these clients on the phone earlier this week. So let me tell you the two places I wouldn't go first. One is don't go into debt. And if you have to, I'm going to give some tips on what to consider, but because you better have some darn good reasons to go into student debt. Number two, never, ever, ever drain your retirement account to pay for your kids' college education or your own. Leave your retirement account alone. And I'll give some ways, again, that you can work around that. It, from my perspective, I know, Matt, you've got a laundry list. But today, mm-hmm. what we want to do is maybe talk about these two things that, you know, where not to get the money and why, and the student debt crisis is out there. Just we'll hit some highlights. Then we'll talk about four or five, maybe six or seven tax-preferred ways to pay for college education that in a proactive way and maybe in a emergency situation, what are some ways to save some taxes in the process that you may not be aware of? So, Matt, what do you think? I just laid out the plan. Are you cool mm-hmm. with that?
I like it. I like it. And I'm gonna yield the balance of my time to the gentleman from Idaho.
That's always a scary one. Okay. All right. Now, so let me give, first I'm going to just quickly say this. So I got on the phone with these clients and they said their student that was a junior or senior in high school looked like she was Ivy League material. She had the grades for it. And I won't take sides on what the husband or wife who felt strongly about her going to Ivy League. I'll just leave it at that. But they were not on the same page. And I said, how much is this going to cost per year with tuition, housing, room and board, travel, and everything? And has she got any scholarships? They're waiting here on scholarships, but it didn't look like she was a genius level scholarship scenario. So they were looking at anywhere from an 80 to 100 grand a year to get their daughter through this undergrad experience. Do you think that's a fair estimate, Matt? You've looked at this.
Yeah. Now I've been down this road with my daughters. And so the what we found is the Ivy League, most of those schools have a no student loan policy. Do you know that Harvard and Yale, Princeton, like, you know, what you know is a common Ivy League, they will not allow their students to obtain a loan.
Really?
They either fund their tuition. Yep. The school either pays for it or your family pays for it. And they make a budget based on your family's income. So that you may have, they may have a huge tuition bill, but they have massive endowments. Nobody pays, at least in form of a student loan. Now, not all of them are like that. You could be at like a Georgetown or kind of the level two Ivy Leagues that have great brands, but they don't have that policy. So unless you're really low income or it may be middle income, your family's paying for that.
And the sad part is I see so many families that are never in the sweet spot. They're like middle income. They make too much money to qualify for any benefits and they're not poor enough to qualify for any benefits. And they're just kind of stuck.
Yep.
And so what this couple was considering, I said, well, how much you've got saved up for student college, you know, your daughter's college? Well, we got this money here, but they were trying to buy some rental property and fund their retirement account. And I'm like, hold it. You're going to stop savings for retirement and even pull some money out of retirement and let your daughter go into debt because she's got to go to one of these schools. And I said, what's her plan? And they said, well, she wants to be a lawyer. Like, you know, I told them it's all cracked up to be, but no, I said, okay, that's cool. But I was waiting for them to say, oh, she has no aspirations for a degree or some arts degree. No offense to those that want to go into arts, but what are you going to do to pay that student loan debt back or make a living? I said to him, well, what kind of lawyer does she want to be? Because if she wants to work on Main Street America and just help do typical civil litigation or business law, she doesn't need to go to an Ivy League. Now, if she wants to work in Chicago or New York, then maybe it's worth paying for this second tier, first tier education because she's going to have the income to pay off some of that debt. But too many people don't think to the end in mind. Where am I going to be in my career? What's the career choice of mine? How much does that average career pay? And how much does the average debt? And so that's what's crazy. So I want to say this right now. The average student debt right now in 2019 per person with any degree is $31,000. And the average student loan payment for graduates is $393 a month, $400. Mm-hmm. The time to pay off that debt, 10 to 30 years. I'll give you some other mind-blowing facts here in a moment. The average graduate student debt is $57,600 with one in four borrowers owing about $100,000 or more. Mm-hmm. Now, here's 10. I'm just going to run through these facts real quick. Then be careful if you're driving because this is going to make you want to careen off the side of the road. National total student debt is now over $1.5 trillion. Number two, college tuition has more than doubled since the 1980s. More than 3 million senior citizens in the U.S. are still paying off student loans. 3 million people, 60 or over, are still paying off student loans.
Yeah. I remember President Obama, when he was president of the United States, sent out a tweet that he'd paid off his student loans. You're become president of the United States, and you still had to get through your student loans. It's crazy.
Unbelievable. Now, here's the one that Matt and I reported on the show last year that is just crazy. This was in Wall Street Journal. Number four fact, as of May 2018, so this is over a year ago now, 101 people in the U.S. owed at least $1 million in student loans. The Wall Street Journal, because this is a national statistics, because they're federally guaranteed loans. So they had the information on this. One was, his name was Mike Maru, an orthodontist with $1,060,945 in student loans. And within the next two decades, his loan balance was going to spiral to $2 million in student loan debt.
Yeah.
Number five, black families carry more student debt than white families and are more likely to default on loans. I mean, that's regrettable, but that's one of these stats in this Business Insider report. Number six, as many as 40% of borrowers could default on their loans by 2023. Next, number seven, of people who use bankruptcy assistance service to file for Chapter 7 bankruptcy, 32% had student loan debt. That's a third of people claiming bankruptcy had student debt as a problem.
By the way, you cannot bankrupt your student loan debt.
That's right.
It's not a bankruptcy, but it's going to stay with you. You heard credit cards and other stuff is getting wiped out, but you cannot bankrupt student loans.
Yep. Now, this was a sad one too. Student loan debt is the reason 13% of Americans in a survey of those that had student debt said they decided not to have children because of student debt. 13% said, well, we can't have kids. Number nine, now, obviously, they had friends that had teenagers, so it was a win-win, but I'm just throwing that out. Number nine, some have drawn parallels between the student debt crisis and the subprime mortgage disaster. And what ticks me off, and I'll tell you this right now before we get to number 10, is that if this gets out of control and there's a student loan crisis and they forgive any freaking student loans, I am not for it. It pisses me off. Do you know how many law students live like lawyers on student loans, and then they go out and live like law students as lawyers? Same thing with dentists, doctors. These graduate students are living high on the hog, driving these expensive cars, racking up student debt, and then, oh, I'm going to get bailed out someday. Whew. Not if I have anything to say about it. Number 10, nearly 50% of millennials who have or had student debt think college wasn't worthwhile. Nearly 50%.
Wow.
Say it wasn't worth it to go to college that have student debt now. Now, arguably, I would like to find out what those 50% had chosen as a college degree, because again, I think 50% of college degrees aren't going to get you a job when you're done. They really aren't. It drives me crazy, some of these liberal arts degrees, yeah, that unless you're on track to be a school teacher or secondary education teacher, what are you going to make money at? So no wonder 50% said it wasn't worth it. Anyway, yeah. So I've finished with that. I just can't say enough how bad student debt is and what a crisis it is. And I want people to stay away from it. And you've got to go in with your eyes wide open if you're going to try and go down that path. Matt.
Okay. Let's pivot though, because a lot of parents know that, right? A lot of parents are like, hey, I don't want my kids to have student loan debt. So what do? They start draining all their resources, what you mentioned earlier. They're like, and many parents, particularly like our generation, our parents' generations. I mean, I think our generation more, we've had student loans, right? Had to live with them, pay them off. And it kind of, bugged us. So we're like, hey, I don't want my kids to have student loans. At least this is kind of me speaking for myself. So you get into this natural thing of, I want to take care of it for my kids. But you're doing it at the expense of yourself and not saving for your retirement or building your own assets. And so this is the struggle of where I think everyone's at right now. So
yeah.
And let's talk about.
I just want to say, I probably have a phone call, and I'm not as intense on my phone appointments as our associates. Some of you that have wanted to make an appointment with me, I might be out a month or so, because I just can only fit so much into my schedule. I'm trying to keep the commitments and promises I've already made and too many emails. And anyway, but the side note is, I don't even do that many appointments daily as our associates, and I still have at least a consultation a month where the client has significantly impacted their retirement account by paying for their kids' college expenses. And they have now, they're in a rock and a hard spot. They're in a pickle. They're in a pickle because their retirement is substantially reduced. But they think they did the right thing. And I don't know. I have to say no. I do not want you sacrificing your retirement account to pay for a kid's college. It just does not make sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a really tough situation. So let's talk about some of the things you can do though. And maybe some just things to think about. Now we're going to do another part two on this about more scholarships and grants and financial aid strategies. But here we want to stick to identifying the student loan crisis and going over some of the accounts you can do and strategies on getting your kids some money to help pay for college.
Yeah. And I'll say this now, as we move into these tax saving strategies, I want to just give three or four tips. Number one, do an ROI analysis. That's return on investment analysis. And what I mean is work backwards. When you sit down with your child, your grandchildren, your brother, your sister, whoever's going back to school, say, I want you to write down right now what your degree is going to be, or at least a general area of where your degree is going to be, and what is their average salary. And then do a monthly budget and go, here's what your student loan impact is going to be on that. So do a return on investment analysis. Number two.
Can I jump in? I'll give an example on that.
Yeah.
That's all right. So my daughter, Claire, who is just starting at University of Arizona this week, actually, was wanting to go to USC and UC San Diego. Well, she'd applied to those schools, and now we're looking at all the acceptances, and she got into University of Arizona with a full ride academic scholarship. But these other schools weren't giving you that, and at the UC schools, you had to pay out of state tuition. So I said, here's what I'm willing to do to help you go to college, but I ain't paying that. So she had to look at it, and this is really interesting because she really wanted to go to California. And she looked at what the amount of student loan she'd have to take, because I told her I'm given this much and you got to make up the rest. And then she calculated what her student loan payments would have to be. And then she looked at her major, which is engineering. And she really considered and asked other engineering kids that were already in college and that were getting internships, some older kids she knew, like, does it matter where I go? Am I going to get a job at this company versus this company because I went to UCLA or USC or UC San Diego over University of Arizona? So there's basically this analysis that ended up, I'm going to University of Arizona. It's a bargain. It's a good deal. And I won't have student loans. And really the employers in engineering could care less.
Yep. I love it. I love it. Excellent. Did her analysis. And I remember, Matt, when you were going through that, talking about what the end result for the same degree with the same starting salary, mm-hmm. same stuff, how much more the school would have cost there and what the student loan debt. And she's all of a sudden realized, I can go visit California when I want to.
Exactly.
And yeah. There we go. Here's still even work there. You know? If you're going to go down this path, borrow only what you need. The goal is to graduate with the absolute minimum in student debt. And even though it's tempting for all your living expenses to have that quality of life, you need to be living on ramen and the cheapest apartment you can get and whatever. If you're married, both of you should be working, trying to pull this off together. Number two is pay interest early. As soon as you can, start paying interest. That's what snowballs with student debt. Next, work while you're in school. And on this, a personal note, Matt Sorensen graduated. This is literally, I think we've done the math, Matt. Matt Sorensen graduated with a law degree twice as fast as I did. He burned through undergraduate school and graduate school compared to my undergrad time and graduate school. Now, I got a master's in taxation, so there's one extra year. But I had a small business It took me 8 years, 7 to 8 years to get through my undergrad because I had a small business. I worked and only went to school part-time for the bulk of my undergrad experience. Matt buckled down. He had scholarships, he had grants, and some student loans. We took two different paths. Now, Matt got done a lot quicker than I did, but I graduated with no student debt. And I worked while I was in school, even when I was in law school. And so it wasn't given to me on a silver platter, but I don't know, work while you're in school. Matt, any comments there since I dragged you into that example?
Yeah. And I worked full time through all that. And I think it's very doable, even for your kids to know that they can have a job, you know, even if it's at least part-time and whether it is a business, and that's educational in and of itself. You know, that type of thing, whether it's a small business, whether they're providing services or what, or even if they have a job on campus, it makes them more budget-wise. They realize that how much it takes to work and create income. It helps them spend a little less and stay out of trouble too, frankly. But yeah, I think working while going to school for whatever you can manage is really important. And even if you're going full time in school, there's still opportunities to work. Even if you're doing weekends or something, figure out a way to work and still make money. You shouldn't just be pulling a zero in the income number.
Yeah. I love it. And I would say this too, this is maybe the final point on this, is to make an informed decision, not an emotional decision. And it's very common that your students, maybe it's again, children, grandchildren, even a spouse, and you're newly married and you're thinking, okay, where are we going to go to school? What are we going to do? Well, it gets emotional. So-and-so's going to USC or going to University of Virginia or going to Texas A&M. I want to go there too. Or they're going Ivy League. Da, da, and it gets into this emotional, keep up with the Joneses. And where are my friends going? And you have to make an informed decision that's very objective, because we're talking about dollars and cents for the next 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
And even though it's so hard, Matt, one of your daughter's friends doesn't have a lot of means, and and tell me what they're doing. I mean, that was a neat experience. I mean, she's really working hard and trying to pull.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have to have a job, and family's, you know, supportive, but the school gives scholarships too. And, you know, there's the Obama scholar, and we should talk about some scholarships and financially in the next one, but you know, there's a lot of scholarship packages out there for those that are lower income. And so and this is, I think they call it the Obama Scholars, which is basically a full tuition scholarship. So now they may have to worry about room and board and stuff like that, but it's manageable, especially a lot of state universities. You're getting in-state tuition. They're pretty good at keeping the costs low. It's the private schools, I think, that particularly the ones that are not the you know, top of the line Ivy League, where they have the no student loan policy, they're almost the worst, quite honestly, because they're so expensive. And here's who gets hit. It really is the upper middle class. If you are upper middle class, you're making over 100 grand a year, you've got kids you want to send to college, you are the one that's going to get no help from the federal government except loans that you can co-sign on for your kids. Yeah. And that is the hardest, but you're not making enough to just shell out, you know, 50 grand, 100 grand, whatever their cost of their four-year degree is going to be. So that is the problem, is the very wealthy, they don't need to stress about this. They can cut the checks. The low income and middle income, frankly, they're getting totally subsidized tuition and grants and all that. It's this upper middle income category that's getting the shaft. And those are the ones that are racking up all the student loan debt.
Yep. Okay. So for you listeners there, Matt and I have been passing some notes, and I think what we're going to do today is just wrap up a few more points on creative ways to approach college and what money not to use for college. And then in part two, we're going to get into those tax incentive strategies to save for college or pay for college at last minute mm-hmm. type strategies, and also hit the scholarships and grants and aid. Matt, do you concur?
I concur. Yeah. For the record.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to throw out another tip or two. My first point is, and this is what I've talked to my kids about, is using the community college route. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And regrettably, there's a stigma. You know, a lot of the smarter kids in school look down on the kids that take the community college route. But I want to talk about that in just for a minute. And I think this is a creative way to pay for college, is whether you go to the big universities part-time or use an online type program. Many, many of these universities are allowing you to go online and start your generals. And the tuition for an online class is a lot cheaper than attending in person. And also going to a community college and getting your undergrad. One of my son's best friends, I won't say his name here on the show. He's a total good kid. He knows who I'm talking about. He was at Dylan's wedding. Just love this kid. His dad was a doctor and upper middle class. And he wanted to go to UCLA, USC. They were in Southern California. And he wanted to follow in his dad's footsteps and go on to medical school. And his dad said, I'm not paying for those big schools. You don't need it. To be a doctor, you don't have to have it. So he went to the community college for 3 years and knocked out 90% of his required classes. And in the last year, transferred to UCLA. His diploma still says UCLA. And he paid for it at a tenth of the cost of his buddies that were in the same neighborhood and they're commuting into college, you know, UCLA. He still had a wonderful experience, but saved a ton of money. And yeah, sure, he had to explain it to people, but this kid's smart and I love him. And I thought that was a very humble way to approach it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very pragmatic. I mean, I did community college for a year. A lot of community college, particularly if you're going to a state school, like going from a community college to UC, for those in California, I went from Salt Lake Community College to University of Utah, is they all have kind of a curriculum that's set that's like, hey, if you take these classes, we knock out your general ed requirements. And so you can transfer. They had to call it a gen ed certificate at the community college that if you, I just went for a year and I just knocked out every general. So when I went there, I just went right into my major. And that was an affordable way to do it. It was easier to schedule classes. Frankly, the professors are a little more understanding for those that actually have a job in a community college. The grading's a little lighter. But it was a good way to learn and get into college. And I think that's particularly for those that don't have the students that can get an academic scholarship at a state school, it's a great way for them to kind of ramp up and get ready for university, not just from a financial standpoint, but just academically.
Yeah. And I'm going to say, Matt, I loved your perspective that if there's an academic benefit of going to the smaller classroom size and the community college. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about business. We're going to talk about this in next show, part two, in depth. But why does your student not have a part-time business while they're going to college? Why are they not managing their own rental property and renting out the rooms? I've got a good friend that just helped his daughter buy a threeplex in Salt Lake City to go to University of Utah, and she's renting out three rooms and living in it. They're going to break even on this little investment property. She's getting the experience of being a landlord. It's a great little investment strategy. I had a janitorial business and a carpet cleaning business and a window cleaning business for 7 years while I went through undergrad. And it's a dirty job, no pun intended. It was white trash, but I was cool. My dad was a microbiologist. He was a PhD with a very successful business. And he was like, here's where I'll help you. And here's where you got to do it yourself. And my wife and I was married young, said, let's just start our business. And we started a janitorial business and it took us 7 years to get through it. But you know, when I went out to interview for my first accounting job, they could care less what my GPA was. They're like, did you graduate? Cool. Tell us about your business. What'd you do? And I got the job. They were fascinated that I was a self-starter, had a small business, and had done it while going to college. Do you think a kid that went through college with no business experience is going to get hired before me, even though it took me 2 extra years, but I have business experience? No way. No freaking way.
Yeah. Anyone listening that owns a business can appreciate that too. You see that in someone and that shows
excitement. I'm into this. You need to show a little more excitement. I'm like into this.
I'm not coming strong. Yeah.
You know,
I thought, you know, we gotta kind of be like
Penn and Teller. I'm talking and you're quiet over there. That's what it feels like. I don't appreciate it.
I know. It's because I don't got people bringing me caffeinated drinks during the show. Mark's got like, you know, he's got a whole staff there, you know, keeping them pumped up and bringing them caffeinated.
Hey, I talk to my staff.
I go when Mark's talking to get some water and get back to my desk.
Well, I don't know what you're doing. What type of training program do you have in the Phoenix office? You need to go out to your assistant and go, you know what? While I'm during the show, I would really appreciate it if you brought me a Diet Pepsi. Yeah. He or she, Thomas would do that for you. He's a stud. But you've just got to ask, Matt. You need to reach out when you need help. You just have to reach out.
Yeah, it's true.
Maria takes care of me. She's right here again. Maria, can I have a lime in that Diet Coke? Do we have any limes? We don't? Okay, no limes. Okay. Thank you. You're amazing. If anybody you call and you need me, you just talk to Maria. She's amazing. She's right here. She will not let you talk to me. That's why she's amazing. She's the gatekeeper. Okay, Matt. Okay, let's wrap it up. Okay, now everybody, yes, this is about college experience, doing it affordably, being creative, being objective, looking at the return on investment, being careful of student debt, not blowing your retirement. Part two, we are going to hit more creative ways to save, get tax incentives, and to get federal aid when possible. We called an audible halfway through here because I think there was just too much to say, and I hope many of you found this beneficial. I'm going to shut up, Matt. You close it out. Give us your tip with a little bit of energy, if you don't mind. We ask. We're begging of you.
Yeah, Mark has worn me down today, man. I'm like trying to jump in and say something, you know. I need like some moderator, you know.
That's not like,
I feel like this is like a presidential debate and Mark's the candidate just like dominated me.
This is Harris taking Biden to task today. You're just like,
here's what I want to say. And this is for me and how I approached it is it depends on your situation, your financial situation, what type of income you had, where your kid's at in terms of their grades and academics. Because what we're gonna get to in the next part is gets into financial aid. If you're lower income again, you're gonna get a lot of assistance and help. If you're higher income, you know, like really wealthy, you know, million type in income or assets, you shouldn't worry about it. But it's this middle income that gets hosed, and that's where you got to figure it out. And we want to look at scholarships because there's a lot of academic options there. So we'll try and break it down and figure out where your kid sits and what they want to do too. That helps you make the right decision to be good for their academics, but also not break the bank.
Yeah, I like it, Matt. I mean, we had the same meeting with Lori Loughlin and her husband, Mosimo, and we told them their kids could go to Long Beach State, but nope. She said, I've got a path. And so,
just wrote the big check and took some fake pictures of, you know, the kid on the rowing team. What did they fake?
I don't remember. Olivia Jade was like, I'm on the rowing team. Really? Anyway, I need to be careful. I don't want to slander. And we never had a meeting with Lori and Mosimo, but I mean, it really is sad what they went through, and if talk about keeping up with the Joneses, that they felt that it was worthwhile to pay or bribe their kids into, was it USC or UCLA? Because their kids had to go. I mean, how screwed up are we as a country that we are spending this much in student debt to go to the school that we think we need to go to? It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
that's the pressure. That's what's created the problem, is that pressure.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well,
see what I got next week. Yeah. I mean, I went to Puerto Rico State and look what you get. You get quality. So I did not go to Puerto Rico State. And I don't want to offend any of you that did go to Puerto Rico State.
Are you saying that? Because I don't think there is Puerto Rico State. I think there's University of Puerto Rico.
Is there?
I think you're right. Because that's
okay. I may have offended someone. Yeah. So if you did go to University of Puerto Rico.
There is Puerto Rico State. Now I really offended someone.
Now it's on you. It's off me. Yeah. I at least knew Puerto Rico State existed. You didn't even know.
Crap. I don't know. Look it
up. Oh, geez. All right. Okay. Take us out.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks everybody for hanging on to this show. We're going to come back. We'll be hitting the strategies, the ways to do it more efficiently and save. Hopefully give you more peace of mind as you're trying to save for college for your kids or grandkids. And if you like the show, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. If you are still listening, you like the show, or you're really lazy about turning off your podcast, you can always reach out to us at refreshyourwealth.com. And we have open forum shows once a month, or at least every 3 weeks, so where you can call in and ask your questions. So stay tuned for that. You can get updates on that if you're signed up for our newsletter at refreshyourwealth.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's eBooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.